Dr. Alice Longley from the University of Auckland has become an expert in figuring out how to collaborate with international artists in these disrupted times. Alice is Associate Professor of Dance Studies in the Faculty of Creative Arts and Industries. Since the world was turned upside down by COVID-19, she's been involved with several projects that involve artists around the planet, and they don't all hinge on Zooming. One relies on the good old-fashioned postal service, where artists send each other envelopes with blank paper inside on which to create. Another involves a digital map that each artist adds to. There are photographs of the work in progress on our webpage, rnz.co.nz/standingroomonly. The finished work will be shown in exhibitions in Melbourne and Santiago and released online to allow audiences to see and interact with the artwork. Alice is talking about her project at the University of Auckland's popular Raising the Bar event to be held in pubs and bars throughout the city this Tuesday. Why do you think it is still, and you believe this, I know, so important to keep international collaborations going between artists? I mean, the world's kind of shut down. We don't know when it's really going to fully open before. So why do you think it is you've gone to all this effort, you and your other collaborators, to keep these international links alive? Why does it mean so much?
I think it is so vital right now that we keep international collaboration between artists. When I started the collaboration for the project that I'm working on at the moment, the first thing that we made core to the work was contact with other artists in different parts of the world. And what we were thinking about was making work that responds to the need for new forms of connection and communication in times of global crisis. You think the role of art is to test new possibilities and make new possibilities of language, of movement, of form. You know, dancers find out what it's possible for bodies to do, and poets find out what it's possible for language to do, and visual artists figure out, you know, how we can use form to make meaning. And in times of emergency and crisis, that is when artists need to work harder to respond to this moment so that we can have new forms of communication, connection, imagination, and cultural work that meets the constraints and the difficulties of the time. And I think now as well we're really thinking about the isolationism, nationalism that's happening, has been intensified with COVID and with border closures. And so I think that it's the role of artists to, I mean, it's much harder, of course, to work together in these times, but we need to resist that isolationism. We need to find ways to connect and find vocabularies and ways to develop forms of imagining the world anew.
You've used the kind of techniques that we would imagine, the all-too-familiar Zoom and online. And I want to come to those projects, but I do want to start with the envelope project, because this is something tangible that can physically cross the closed-off continents of the world. So how has this worked?
Well, it's a very basic, you know, technology, the old envelope and the pen pal or the chain letter. So what we've done is, well, we were really looking at evading border closures and working against, you know, isolationism. So we created these envelopes that are works of art in themselves. So my partner, Jeffrey Holdaway, created these quite, if I say so myself, beautiful watercolour paintings. So each envelope is actually a painting, an original painting. And on the other side, if you imagine like four rectangles on the front of an envelope. So the first artist, I write the address of the first artist in. Let's say it's Nipan Orwiyezna in Thailand. And so it goes to Nipan. Then I also fill the envelope with a few miniature artworks and blank pieces of paper. And then when Nipan receives the envelope, he can keep something and then he adds something in. He erases his own name on the front of the envelope and he writes the next artist's name in, and then he has to figure out how to reseal the envelope. So by the time that the artist goes through the hands of five artists around the world, each one crosses into a new country, then you get all the postmarks, you get the adaptations that each artist has made. So that envelope itself is a work of art. And then inside the envelope is just a surprise. You could be getting work from someone that represented, you know, Venice Biennale in your envelope. You could be getting an art teacher from Finland. You know, it's just sort of chance. It's a combination of Maximo, my collaborators' networks, and my networks. We pulled them together and asked people if they'd like to be part of this project. It's also sort of an anti-capitalist project. It's a gift economy. So the idea is nobody's really getting paid for their labour, but everybody gets to keep an original work of art.
I love this. I know that you and Maximo also, though, had to talk about the ethics of using post because somebody has to deliver the post. Was that quite an interesting conversation for you to decide whether this collaboration was I don't know, what an essential service?
That's right. Yeah, we had a big conversation around the ethics of our project, and because this was right at the beginning of the pandemic when we started the project. And we were worried about infecting people. We were worried about using, you know, resource that should be going towards healthcare and whether art practice was indeed necessary at this time. And then we decided the project really touches on whether it's, like, it asks that question, and we think it's an important question to ask. And then we realised how many of our friends in different parts of the world were having packages delivered. So we decided, yes, if people can have books delivered to their houses, then we can send artwork around the world. And as we look back at that time now, a year on, we're absolutely convinced. Some of the envelopes took like up to 7 months. Some of them still haven't arrived. One arrived in Mongolia after 10 months. So it went straight from Auckland to Mongolia, and it took 10 months for that trip to be made.
I love the fact that it actually did finally, after all that time, show up.
And you can just imagine. So we've got 16 of the envelopes. Each of them will go through the hands of 5 artists, including Max and I, each time. Each time an envelope lands, it's like a miracle. And it's even just for Max and I, it's been such a hopeful thing to have this project. You know, and because it's us pooling our connections, I've made friends with all of these artists that I would never have known otherwise. And you have to do a series of communications. So you invite them to be part of the project. And then when they get the envelope, they contact you and you tell them the address for the next artist. And then you make sure that they know, you know, to keep something and add something, check in about that, and then ask them to document the envelope crossing their city and being posted in their letterbox. So we have all these beautiful videos of envelopes crossing, you know, New York in winter, Scotland in winter, the Canary Islands, the Azores Islands in the middle of the Atlantic Sea by the post office next to the ocean. So we've got all, you know, Finland in the depths of the snow. And we have worked with all continents now. So it's quite amazing to put these videos of the same envelope passing through these different landscapes and cultures and places.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Now, the next one also I love the concept of, which is a digital map. And this is working with 50 artists around the world. What have you asked them to do?
Max made a sort of a base map. It actually has sort of Aotearoa at the centre, and then the rest of the world goes on the left, to the left.
That's
and the right.
That's the way
so
it
sort
should
of
be.
Yeah, right. So it's a base map, and we email it to them, and we ask them to make an intervention in the map in any way they like, and then to send it back to us as a Photoshop layer or a JPEG layer. So they send us a digital intervention.
Let's define intervention just for people. Essentially, it's a mark or an artwork or a sign or something. Can be anything.
Yeah, so it's Paul Hughes from Nottingham got quite into embroidering wounds as a COVID practice. And so he sewed a sort of shape of a wound over the map and then scanned it in to a digital form. Other people painted on theirs. Oh, Valeria Conte in Argentina put hers over a garden, made holes in the map and planted seeds where the holes were so that plants grew through the map and then photographed that process. So all kinds of mark making, drawing. Some people wrote, some people took notes. There were all different kinds. But intervention is kind of a word for an action to in response to the material. And so it's quite deliberately an open word.
And it's going to go on show in Santiago.
It's going to go on show in Santiago, but we actually just found out last week, we've confirmed that we're going to be having a show in Melbourne, probably in September, but we're still confirming the exact dates, but later this year at the Bus Projects Galleries in Melbourne. So we've got a show in Melbourne and we'll be showing the envelopes. I've now started redirecting some of the envelopes that had been to 5 artists. So instead of going to Chile, they'll go to Melbourne, and then after Melbourne, they'll go to Santiago. And then the maps will be made. Some of them is like large vinyl print works on the floor and the wall, so they're quite immersive physically. And then we've also got digital versions of the work.
I want to see this here in New Zealand. I think since you've been putting so much work into this, Alice, it's only fair that you get to see these exhibitions too. Would that be your hope?
I would love to see this work here in Aotearoa. It's a difficult one because I'm a dance and performance artist, and the gallery space is, you know, it's really a thing when you're a dance artist to start moving, you know. So when it's Maximo, he's a visual artist, so he has that space of working with gallery spaces, but it does need to be an installation. So maybe an installation in a performance space, maybe at the Old Folks Association Hall, where we could book it out for 5 or 6 days straight and have performances as well as install some of the work. Or maybe there could be a gallery space that would do it here. I would love that.
There you go. The idea is there. And talking about performance, actually, I mentioned Zoom before and satellite. You have been using that technology to create collaborative works too, and this is different again.
So I've been working with these two Chilean artists, Maxima Cordova Pincheira and Macarena Campbell-Para, since 2017, and we've made work every year since then. So Maca has been part of the project too. So Max and I worked really closely on the envelopes and the maps, and then Maka and I started thinking about a performance version of this, and we've created a guidebook that we can send out to performance makers. So we send very specific tasks and instructions and images, and then people can respond to that guidebook in their own way. And we had a 4-hour-long Zoom workshop, which was actually hosted by an art centre in Montreal, called Language is an Intangible Bridge, where we were all on Zoom from different time zones all across the world. So we had dancers from Aotearoa, from Sweden, from across South America, so Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, Santiago, North America, so we had Toronto and Montreal and New York. So we were all in our different time zones in three different languages working together. So we had our Zoom on, but we were making things. So we weren't necessarily looking at the Zoom. We were kind of like an art workshop, you know. We're using the concept of cardboard. We call it projeto carton, project cardboard project. Everybody has cardboard and cutting knives, and we think about cardboard as an equalizing skin, you know, because everywhere has cardboard, and you can usually find cardboard for free anywhere you are in the world. And it's this amazing material that you can turn into a skin or an object or a miniature city or an architecture or a sign. You know, you can cut into it, you can make it into so many things. So it's this very accessible and open material that people can translate as they like. And so what we do is we run the workshop and give the instructions. People leave their Zoom on, but they're dancing and making and not really looking at the camera, and certainly not sitting on chairs. And then we all come back and we make little videos in our studios or our rooms or our lounges or wherever we are. And then we share the videos, and then we do little performances for our Zoom cameras. But it's a very performative, kind of trying to imitate that sense of being in a studio together, which I think the performance and art communities so desperately miss, is that time just to be working on your own project by yourself, but with others, you know, really in that energy of togetherness, but without having to be visually shackled to being stared at while you're working, you know. So we kind of untethered ourselves from our screens to be able to work in solidarity with each other, keeping each other company and then sharing some little bits at the end. But mostly we were about that sense of withness and closeness and connection.
Even when the world does open up again and people can travel, whenever that might be, do you want to keep exploring these methods of connecting? Because as you say, I know you miss the one-on-one with someone from another country, but here you're working with artists literally at one time from all around the world. Mm. And that's something other and still magnificent.
Yeah, it's magnificent. Like this morning I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to present a talk and show some of this work to the Living Maps Network, which is based in London. And we had people from everywhere tuning in. And I just think, you know, as academics or artists, we can go to shows and conferences, but, you know, the cost of that in terms of the climate is huge. And it is really exciting. I've been invited to teach at all these different art schools and places, you know, because I can just go in over Zoom and do a 2-hour session with the students so easily. And I've been supervising new students in Ireland and Helsinki. since COVID hit, because, you know, they can have a supervisor from anywhere in the world. They're not just limited to the people in their country. So it has created a sense that we are available to each other in new ways, which doesn't take away from the absolute wonder of being in the same studio and, you know, feeling that intuitive sense of, you know, when you're in the same room with someone and you're moving with them or you're making art with them and you just can read the situation and be inspired by each other together. I mean, it's much harder to get that sense when you're working on Zoom. But at the same time, yes, I think although it's nearly impossible, making these attempts has allowed us to flow like water, you know, to be able to keep connecting with each other and keep making stuff and keep valuing the importance of art in our cultures and our communities.
You mentioned Max a few times. Let's have a look at how the two of you met, because even before COVID, clearly this has been a rich collaboration between the two of you, and unlikely when you think about it, Aotearoa New Zealand and Chile.
Yes. Yeah, it is sort of unlikely, especially because he's very much a visual artist and I'm more of a performance person. We were both invited to be part of a group show at the Museum of Contemporary Art Santiago called Sur Sur, which was about working between Aotearoa and Chile and also about breaking the boundaries between visual art and dance. So it was dancers and visual artists in this quite big show. And Carol Brown and I flew over and we were there for 2 weeks. And Max happened to have a really large scale exhibition on at a big art centre, the Cerrillos Art Centre. So I got to see his exhibition where he looked a lot at maps. And I just co-edited this book, Artistic Approaches to Cultural Mapping. So I was really interested in artist maps. And I just found his work really profound. So we sort of even, the thing about Max and I is we don't speak each other's language. His English was pretty average when I met him, and my Spanish continues to be pretty terrible. His English has improved markedly over the years. But we communicated to each other through our work, you know. We really could kind of understand each other and our politics and our aesthetics through our work, and we decided we'd like to keep working together. So the following year, Max and Marka both came to New Zealand, and we did work on Waipapa Marae and at the Old Folks Hall here in Auckland. And then I flew to Santiago and we worked together at the Museum of Memory and Human Rights, and we performed a work there, which was, yeah, it was really inspiring to be in that setting. And then in 2019, we were making work. We were invited to do a residency at the School of the Art Institute Chicago, and we were actually making that work when the social movement broke out in Santiago, which was super intense. I mean, the city went from being like a elegant, cosmopolitan, you know, very urban city to being violent and dangerous and very strongly militarized overnight. It just kind of broke. Just the rage that the people had against this very extractive neoliberal world that they lived in, and they had enough. The people just kind of together decided they'd had enough. So that was a really important moment for me to see the role of art in that social movement, and seeing the people of Chile standing up sort of just to neoliberal policy was incredible. And it also was incredible preparation for me for COVID, you know, because it was like a lockdown, you know. Supermarkets closed, there was no shopping, no cultural sector, no schools. Everything just shut down for the whole rest of that year. You couldn't travel across the city. Our project stopped pretty much immediately. So that was the last day that we worked together on that trio. And I travelled to the States by myself and performed what would have been a trio as a solo, which was quite amazing to be in Chicago, because it was the Chicago School of Economics that was the starting point for the Chilean dictatorship coming into to Chile in the 70s. It was sort of American-backed coup. It was super violent, and, you know, it lasted for a very long time into the 90s. And they've had that dictatorial regime sort of in their policies since, and this was standing up against that. But I did manage, when I came back from the States, I had been given honorariums from the School of the Art there, and I gave them all to Max and Marka, because, you know, it was a genuine state of emergency and crisis, and I was genuinely very worried about all my friends. But Max took this tiny amount of funding. It was like $400 or something like that. And he spent it, he bought 20,000 Band-Aids. And each of the Band-Aids, he worked with a community of artists. So they worked together, this group called Artists in Resistance. And they stamped the words Basta Yar, hand-printed by hand, on each of the 20,000 Band-Aids. So each Band-Aid became an artwork. And Basta Yar means enough's enough, or enough now. And so they're saying enough violence, enough sexual assault, because sexual assault was a way that the military were using to repress people to stop them from protesting. Enough being shot in the eye, enough, you know, youth being people being incarcerated. Like, enough violence. It's time to heal. It's time to heal this society. We need to heal our country. Like, people were just completely overwhelmed and exhausted by this stage. So yeah, Max made this worked with this group of artists to create this protest where they rained Band-Aids down on the Alameda, which is a main street going through Santiago, during a really big protest, you know, over, and you think about the water cannon and the police in their like extreme battle gear and the guns and everything, and then this rain of plasters just being given out to people, and loads of artists just handing them out one on one, but also them just drifting through the air by the thousand. And I mean, that was such an inspiring moment for me to think about art in times of crisis, and how art can kind of make these actions that words can't really do. You know, you feel it when you suddenly have this little object drift into your hands, a little Band-Aid saying, you know, enough violence. And I guess that, yeah, that has really been those kind of experiences. And there's so many experiences that I had of art in the space of protest in Chile in 2019, because the artists, the graffiti, the theatre, the music, just, it was like they didn't have a leader to the movement, but everybody was creating songs and chants and placards and events in the streets. So it's really the art that brought the people together. I guess that's helped intensify my belief in the importance of international artistic collaboration in times of crisis.
Dr. Alice Longley, who's a speaker at the University of Auckland's Raising the Bar event on Tuesday. Her topic is making art across time, space and borders, and she'll be giving that talk at the Dyson Fork in Victoria Street, and her full interview will go up on our webpage.